My name is Paul Hendy from TS4 Living. We started the company around 10 years ago now, 2009 actually. And we've been trading now since designing low energy, very efficient homes that are comfortable living and basically do not stress the occupants when it comes to sort of thermal performance. So they're warm in the winter and cool in the summer.
So I had a look at your website and you talk about how you design climate responsive homes. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
Yes, look, a climate responsive home is a home that doesn't require mechanical heating and cooling to actually perform during most of the summer and winter months. It basically is a home which we've designed in a way where natural ventilation, orientation, good shading where needed, or certainly special glass that we can use as well that stops solar light coming in, or solar energy coming into the building, and good insulation that's built to a very high specification as well. So it's well sealed. That's what a climate responsive home is. It's a home that responds to the climate without requiring a massive of energy to heat and cool.
Now, you said you started, 11 years ago in 2009. What sort of changes in sustainability in that area have you seen in that time?
Well, it's quite interesting because I've always been saying in the next five years, and I think that's just starting to come now. I'm just starting to see a change, certainly in our demographic. So when we first started, we used to work a lot with deep greens, individuals which were very, very environmentally focused and planet focused. Now, our client database has evolved from anybody from, I think our youngest client was 24 years old, our oldest has been 80, and anywhere in between. So there's no clear age demographic. And certainly, when it comes to the sort of people we're getting, they can be from any walk of life, basically. It's people more that want to live in a comfortable home, want a well-designed home, an architecturally designed home, and a home which has light and an ambience to it, which is above the standard house that you typically buy.
I remember talking to somebody about Sustainable House Day a number of years ago and asking a similar question of, what changes have you seen? And their answer was, when we first started this, all of the homes that we were doing were, well off grid, well out of the main cities. And yes, as you say, done by deep green people. But now they're sort of starting to crawl into the suburbs and not that out of place with houses around them. They just perform better.
Yeah, that's a very good observation, actually. Another gentleman that came to one of our open homes turned around and grumbled that why is it all companies building these houses these days and not owners, which is also a fair observation and is similar to what you've just said in many ways. It's the marketplace is changing. I mean, we can design a house now that doesn't need to look like it's a sustainable house. For instance, the piano house, as we call it, is a very simple box without any shading whatsoever, but it still performs incredibly well.
Well, obviously, okay, so Piano House is the house that is your featured house in this year's Sustainable House Day, because you had some challenges with, the orientation and the smallness of the block and things like that. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes, the site is one of those sites you come across occasionally that just is terribly orientated. A gentleman came in off the street, literally, and sort of turned up and said, look, can you design something that's going to not cost me a small fortune to run? And he put this plan in front of me. And I drew two square boxes on a peculiar angle on there and said, yeah, sure, we can do that. And he said, can you build that? I said, yes, I don't see why not. And he disappeared. And a couple of days later came back, having turned around and basically made the advance on buying the site. I said, right, when can you start? So it was a site that faces basically northeast, and it is due northeast, 45 degrees off of north, which is definitely not ideal. But we've still got northern living space in there through taking a slightly different angle as opposed to just the house that's next door that is just planted on top of the, as you would do, I guess most people would do, on top of the lot that's there, parallel boundary, etc. And we've done something a little different for that.
So was there any issues getting it through council?
No, interesting comment. No, because what we did, we actually dealt with council right from the very start. We had a meeting with council and we had some draft ideas and we had the council come on board. So we told them it was going to be a very low energy house. We were aiming for 8-star and above from a performance rating. It was in a heritage area. So we were respectful for material used and setback. And it's also a single story area. Now we've actually got a 2-story house in there. So again, we looked at all of the setbacks and we designed within those. So we didn't push the boundaries from council's point of view at all. And it actually went through really quickly. They signed it off without any issues at all.
Okay, so that's really interesting. That's really what I'm hearing from that is that you've got an understanding of what council needs and how you can work within that and still design a house that, as you say, you've put in at an unusual angle on the block, you know, just for what we normally have, but haven't really had any troubles. It's fitted in with their requirements.
No, exactly. Yeah, I think it's a case of getting council on board as well. It's always been our philosophy to include council and to be very inclusive of their policy as well. Occasionally, we push height boundaries and the likes, but I've had other councils turn around and speak to me at, you know, your building's not compliant. What can we do? What would you like me to do? Or can we make it lower? Not really. Well, actually, I don't want to make it lower. I'd sooner turn around and can we change the cladding on there so it looks a little bit lower? And I've actually negotiated with council to do things like that, because a lot of the time council, when they see good design with merit, they'll put it through without really hesitation. And I think that's where going to an architectural practice, going to a very good design practice, you'll get that advantage with council. You'll be able to do things you wouldn't normally be able to do.
That's a really interesting comment because, you know, as we sort of tend to see urban infill, we're looking at houses being knocked down and other houses being, you know, two or three or five being built on the block. And it doesn't look like there's a huge amount of thought into anything at all, really.
Yeah, that's very true. I would say, well, there is thought. The thought is towards maximising the return on the piece of land.
Okay, well, that's true too.
But in it's a cynical comment.
Yes. But in the sense of, I look at these and go, how did these get through? How were these approved?
Well, if they tick the box, then you're talking about aesthetic, and aesthetic is very subjective. And so, you know, what council have the ability to do is basically enforce height and setback and boundary and overlooking, stormwater and things like that. So it's all the technical sides in many ways. They still have an ability to put some leverage on material use and colour. So to try to put a bright pink building in a suburb is going to be difficult. But when it comes to actually whether those windows are nice or whether the placement of the door is nice or it looks pleasing to other people, that's very subjective. And I think council always find it hard to enforce. It would be almost impossible to enforce in some ways.
That's very interesting to hear you say that. All right, so if we go back to Piano House, so we've covered orientation, but you said that there's not a lot of shading, but you've used particular glasses. Are you able to talk about glass use? Because there's quite a lot of confusion about glass in Australia.
Look, the glass we use these days, I mean, there are a number of different types of glass, different coatings on glass. A lot of people are familiar with low-E glass, which actually performs not as well as a sealed or double glazed unit, but it performs better than an ordinary piece of glass. The coating helps to reflect some of the thermal energy back into the house in the winter. Some of the high-tech glasses coming out now actually can absorb the infrared that's coming from the sun. Now, the infrared carries the heat, and that's what you feel when you go out into the sun. And as soon as that comes in through a window and strikes something in the house, whether it be a curtain or whether it be a concrete slab floor or tile or a piece of furniture, that furniture absorbs the radiation. Now, with the glass, this glass actually reflects that radiation back, and it works incredibly well to the point where we've done the Piano House, for instance, and you cannot feel the heat on one piece of glass, but you can on the other. But to all intents and purposes, it looks almost identical. So you can actually mix it in elevations where you need to, and certainly use it on certain elevations. There's a price premium, but you then offset that against, well, does the house, the aesthetic of the house require shading? Can we put shading on there? If not, well, then the price premium is worth paying. Do we fit external blinds? We can do that. But again, is the price premium for the glass, you know, is that more cost effective? Yeah, so there are lots of ways to approach it now. And I think that's certainly helped by not only having a knowledge of the performance of glass and the coatings that you can get these days, but also by a really good energy assessor as well. They can actually point you in that direction. So if you have a good certifier on board or a good energy assessor on board, they can really assist you, certainly assist a designer and architect in choosing good glass as well.
Now, Piano House is part of this year's Sustainable House event, and because none of us can go anywhere, this is a virtual event online. Are you involved in the virtual online event?
Yes, I am. And we're talking about how to make a house carbon positive. What is carbon positive housing? And how could that potentially, in quite a large way, affect the amount of carbon that we have to generate to heat and cool our homes? And if that's successfully can help reduce that, then hopefully we may have an effect on global warming.
All right. So you've talked a lot about low running costs with a climate responsive home. Can you give us some indication of like how low you can drop the running costs?
Well, I'd like to think you can run a house for free. Technically, you shouldn't be using energy anyway. So we design our houses right from conceptual stage with solar panels. Now, typically a 6 kilowatt system now is actually really quite affordable, a good quality one. So if you're looking at running a house with a good quality system, we don't run batteries at the moment. We don't believe they're cost effective. The house is well insulated and well sealed. What all our clients tend to do now is they'll put the air conditioning on during the day, and that's being powered by your solar panels. And then, so in other words, it's free. You're not taking grid energy. And then when they come home, that turns off, and the house is closed down. And if it's still hot outside, they don't open the house at all. So it's nice and cool. And the vice versa in the winter. So a lot of our clients will heat their houses during the day, and they don't need any heating on at nighttime at all. So basically, you're pulling all your energy to heat and cool, including hot water as well. We use a system where we have hot water, and it's basically a heat pump system where that's powered by solar panels. So technically, I mean, the piano house, for instance, I've had an email through from the gentleman there recently, and he's using about 20%, he reckons, of what he used to use. And that was in a very poorly insulated house. So, yeah, he's dropped his bill down by 80%.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge, isn't it? Yes.
It is, but it also dependent upon people's usage as well. So if you're careful, I mean, a lot of our clients, and we did a house a while ago, which is 280 square meters, which is quite a large house for us. He's basically running just about, I understand, just about with almost zero bills. So he's exporting more than he's using.
That should make him very happy.
It also makes them a positive sort of carbon house as well.
Yeah. Now, people are often, afraid to approach specialist house designers due to the fear of it being too expensive. You know, they're often afraid to even ask about budgets. There's mm-hmm. sort of a feeling that if you walk in and you don't have enough money, somebody will just, escort you out.
Yes.
So what sort of budgets can you work with?
Well, look, the smaller the house, the bigger the cost, believe it or not. There's a ratio of square meter cost. Every client is different. Every sort of site and location is different. And every requirement is different. We have atypical sort of inclusions. We call them typical because everybody's different. Everybody wants something unique to them. And that's what we offer. So we don't pre-package things. We haven't got sort of sets of kitchens or taps or things like that. So it is unique to the individual that comes in. We do a one-hour consult, and if I see somebody come in with a price, as I did a little while ago, actually, and it was the case, I've got this amount of money and I want this size of house. Well, there's a disconnect between the two. So I wrote a polite email back, and then they wrote one back saying, yes, but I've forgotten to mention that I'm paying for all this, this, and this separately. So we had a dialogue. We had our meeting online via Zoom, and they've signed up, and we will be hopefully getting them on site just after Christmas. That one-hour session is normally really good for us to actually clearly define what the client wants, what their budget is, and what they actually want at the end of the day, what their perceptions are. But we don't escort people off the premises. Now, we haven't got any premises. We're working from home at the moment still anyway. So,
well, that's a point. Yes. There is certainly an enormous amount of individual tailoring. Like, as I've been talking to you, it's like very much tailoring to the site, very much tailoring to the council area, and very much tailoring to the person and what they want, or the family and what they want, plus also the budget. That certainly gives you the best opportunity to build a well-functioning house, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I mean, we pride ourselves on our planning. We spend a lot of time being sort of very, very careful to plan space, not to waste space. I see so many modern houses with passageways that run sort of 15 meters down the center of a house. And if the passageway is a little over a meter wide, that could be maybe 20 meters of floor space wasted. Well, if the floor space, for instance, is $2,000 a square meter roughly, then that's $40,000 you've wasted of your build cost. It's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but it sort of works roughly that way. So we try to avoid passageways if we can do, and corridors wherever we can when we're designing. we look at sight lines through a house. We look at light coming in through a house as well. So we're always trying to, we're also looking at accessibility as well. I have a number of clients now with accessibility issues. So that's becoming more and more, this multi-generational design is becoming more and more relevant for our society, where it may well be mum, dad getting older and moving in with the son or with the daughter, and growing older within the same building.
So let's just backtrack a second. When you said sight lines, could you please let us know what sight lines are?
When we design with sight lines, I personally like to design where you can see glimpses. When you walk into a house, for me, it's a journey. So you're walking in from outside, you're seeing materials. There's something you subconsciously pick up on, and you walk into a house, and we try to bring some of those materials inside the house as well. And as you're doing that, you're also seeing through, you're getting glimpses of the house. It opens up to you. So it gives you an idea of what's ahead, what lies ahead, and what you may see. So it's a journey, and we try to do that with all our homes, irrespective of where they are, whether they're on a fantastic site in the middle of 20 hectares, or whether they're in a 400 square meter site in the middle of Campbelltown. And that's something for me which is very important. It's an architectural element which we try to weave into our designs right at the beginning.
We've been talking with the assumption really of new builds. Do you also work with renovations?
Yes, we do. Now, I'd love to say I love working renovations, but they're always harder because you're never quite sure what you're going to come across. And that's the minus point. So it's really difficult to price a renovation accurately. Because when you start taking bits of planning off and bits of wall off, you suddenly find that what should be there and what you would think would be there isn't. But renovations are great because it means we're not demolishing things. So the carbon content that's been locked up in that building remains. And we're upgrading it. So my own house, for instance, is an old double-fronted cottage with a new addition to the back, which is a very modern addition. But again, it's an 8.4-star home. It's a very warm home in the winter, cool home in the summer. But we've kept all of the old building at the front. And we're slowly, much to my wife's annoyance, refurbishing it at the front. So we're taking the plaster off and replastering. We've done a lot more insulation. We've rewired, replumbed, etc. So that the house now, this is a finished home, should be here for 50, 80, 100 years.
What brought you into this area of climate responsive homes? How did you get to the place where you are now?
That's a really good question. I'm originally from the UK, and I guess when I was growing up, my father was a builder. And he used to work for the Crown Estates over there, so Prince Charles, and a lot of his work was there. So he always worked to a very high standard. So that's, I've inherited that. But we also had very high energy bills in the UK compared to here, if you go back sort of 35, 40 years. And I can remember when I was 8 years old, my father putting double glazed windows in to an old house, a house that's actually older than what I live in at the moment. So I guess that's what's brought me in quietly into the sort of the building game. I've always been linked with design. I've always been linked with architecture. And coming here and seeing all of the free energy. I went to study at Adelaide University when I was 42 and did a master's degree. And that's when I realized that you have free energy here that we don't have in Europe. And if you really are foolish if you don't capitalize on it and use it.
Yeah, right. That sounds like a really interesting way to get here.
Yeah, the roundabout way via New Zealand. So I came in via the back door. So, but the same thing applies over there. And if anything, they're slightly ahead of realising this, and their building codes are a little bit better than ours are. We're getting there slowly.
Oh, to be honest, I think they're quite a long way ahead, to be honest. And sometimes I look at, renovation shows based in England or Europe, and it's like, my goodness, we are so far behind, stuff that we consider to be, revolutionary, like, say, double glazed glass, is considered normal.
It is. Oh, it's standard. I mean, back in the 70s in the UK, any older house built in the 40s and 50s had their windows knocked out and UPVC windows put in place. There was a huge drive there for energy efficiency, and there has been ever since. It's interesting. It comes from several directions. It's driven from cost, so it's driven from the consumer, so they need to reduce their energy bills. So that was the first thing in the UK that happened.
I guess in a sense, if you say the energy bills were higher, then the drive to reduce them has also been higher.
Most definitely. So, it hits your pocket, basically. And it's money coming out of your wallet on a monthly basis. And It also came from part of the being part of the EU as well. So the English or the UK government were also driving legislation as well. So the builder and the building materials suppliers, the manufacturers were caught in the middle, and they basically had to comply. They had pressure coming up and pressure coming from above, pushing down. Here, we've got there are a lot of manufacturers that would love to improve the products. And certainly when we did the zero carbon house at Campbelltown, and we were involved with some of the international, certainly national and international manufacturers here in Australia, they all wanted to do more. But there's a resistance to do that. There's no drive from coming from consumer upwards or coming from government downwards. So nothing's moving very quickly at the moment. The consumers, I'm hoping, will start to realise more and more so.
Yes, I think that is the hope, and it's things like, you know, Sustainable House Day that are slowly spreading that concept of, you know, you can have a better performing house.
You most certainly can. I mean, what's been really interesting in this particular time that we're living at the moment is that I'm seeing clients now for the first time in their homes. Normally they came to the office for a 1-hour consult. Now I'm talking to them in their own homes via Zoom. And without exception, I'm sat in my own home, working from home at the moment. And I normally sit here even all through the winter, either in shorts or light trousers and a short sleeve shirt. I think at the moment it's 23 degrees. There are no heating or cooling or anything happening here at all. Every client actually, without exception, has been sat there with a beanie hat on and a puffer jacket or a scarf or something similar, thick pullovers, asking and talking to me about, you know, how can we create thermally efficient homes? That's been quite an eye-opener. I'd forgotten what it was like to live in an Australian house, a typical Australian house.
I guess it would be an eye-opener for them also, looking at you sitting in light shirt and going, you know, where you're actually able to see what you're after. It becomes more than just a theoretical concept.
Correct. Yes, it does. It's very easy to put value on things. But when it comes to comfort, one of my clients actually made a comment a few years ago, just after we'd finished the house, we'd moved into the new part. And both my wife and I, coming from the Northern Hemisphere, find Australia, and you'll find if you talk to anybody from the Northern Hemisphere, they'll say the same thing. Australia's the coldest place in the world to live, which is ridiculous, because in the winter, we just don't design our houses for the climate. Yeah, there's a wonderful expression that we create basically permanent tents. That's, you know, what we build. What we've found is now, when I was talking to my client, and it's very difficult to define what it's like living in a comfortable home. But he said, you just have done, when I was talking to him one day. And he said, that's because you've just said that you've enjoyed living in your home. This is the first time over the winter you've actually enjoyed being there. And I guess it depends what your requirements are. If you don't mind walking around with a beanie hat and a puffer jacket, then that's fine. That's great. That's no problem at all. And a lot of people will do that and help to reduce their fuel bills. But I like to walk around with bare feet and, you know, a light shirt in the middle of winter without having to put energy into the house to be able to do that. We're all different.
I would say the bulk of the people would be quite happy to walk around in a light shirt and bare feet in the middle of winter, given a choice.
Yeah, this is true. It's quite amusing, actually. So people come in here when we have open days in the house, which we obviously not had for a little while. And they walk in and it's September and we've only got some northern light. It's not a particularly well-orientated house here, but we've got northern light that's coming in through a window, and they walk in and they say, oh, you've got underfloor heating. No, that's just purely sunlight striking a floor. And it straight away gives you that sense of warmth. And people, unless you've experienced that, you can't, it's very difficult for me to explain.
Well, I guess when we get back to actually visiting people's houses, which, you know, maybe next year, a few more people will be able to experience that. All right.
Oh, we hope so, yes. Yeah.
All right. So how do people get in contact with you if they have a build that they're looking to do, or a renovation, or, you know, a something?
Well, we have a website. It's very simple. It's just T for Tommy, S for Sugar, number 4. com.au, and that's probably the easiest way. We have a booking system there where people can see when we're available, book up an hour segment, and we basically still work on Zoom at the moment. I think people still feel comfortable with that, and then we can just discuss your project. You know, it's, you know, what do you want to do, where is it, what's your budget, what are your aspirations, and go from there.